One day it will happen. Could be happening now. That a voice from another dimension will speak to Earth. You might as well practice and be prepared for it.
This is Drexian Cruiser Control, Bubble 1, to Lardozian Cruiser 8-203X. Please decrease your speed to 1.788.4 kilobonds. Lardozian Cruiser 8-203X, please use extra caution as you pass the Aqua construction site on the side of the Aquabahn. I repeat, proceed with caution.
You can't see outside yourself, but we do have imagination. The expression of all individual imagination is what I call homiletics. And each being's imagination is their own unison. And there are as many unisons as there are stars in the sky.
Said, well, you know, the best way to play in tempo is to get a metronome. Oh, my gracious. And forget about atomic clocks now. Too exact. But you know what? The body, the heart doesn't have the same time length, you understand, between each contraction and relaxation of the heartbeat. Ba-boom. And the next ba-boom. If they are the same, that is extremely dangerous.
They never move. Nothing. What physics? What possibilities? It never moves. Nothing.
The instruments are, you know, very special to me. But the main instrument is myself. I spent so much time, like, dreaming about making music and, like, my imagination of even pretending, you know, in my room, I jammed out. I was in a band by myself, you know what I mean? Like, so anytime I'm on an instrument, I'm just like, that's me, something is coming out.
Damn. Yo, listen to that. It's like you don't have any friends once you hear that.
I have seen so much, but yet have experienced less than most dogs. Ooh, I am smart. I am strong. I know how to survive with sophistication only known to the cunningness of beings. I am the beginning of the female hustling spirit, hustling to survive so that others may strive to be something more than me. Hustling to survive so that others may strive to be something more than me. Hustling to survive so that others may strive to be something more than me. I am
intelligent, bien formée.
Mon esprit est
libre.
Libre. I am 25. There will never be any pictures of me.
Thank you. would write hard. The burner to sit down and draw, not from knowledge outside of oneself, intellectualism, but from within. Of existence. Yeah, yeah. Breathe together.
Those of the reality have lost their way. Now they must listen to what myth has to say. Those of the reality have been bruised and beaten by the truth. Those of the reality have been slaves of a bad truth. So there's nothing left now but the myth. The myth is neither bad nor good. Its potentials are unlimited.
Till Voices Wake Us, a play by Luella Dizon, from the collection Contemporary Plays by Women of Color. Once upon a time, I was a little girl with a secret and wonderful power. I could see things in a way no one else could see. To me, the morning was a great snail, crawling along with a sky blue shell, and one red eye as the sun, and dragging behind it, it was the rich, moist, velvet cloak of the night. Wrapped in the covers of night, I would dream, and I could remember all my dreams as if I were dreaming them for the first time.
You see, the Filipino woman, the Filipina, is descended from a long line of priestesses. For their tribes, these women performed the most sacred rites. They could heal with herbs, speak with the gods, and exorcise devils. They found their darkest powers in dreamlike trances.
In fact, once I knew that I could relive each dream, I realized I could put them away, like books. They could be pulled out and read over, like a map for another adventure.
To this day, there are still wise old women in the smaller towns who still act as links to the supernatural.
Dreams showed me everything that I ever wanted to see, until one day.
That was something I couldn't take with me when I left the Philippines. The links to the spiritual world, through wise old women.
Borders to me are not a big deal, but the border I remember best wasn't even my own.
The links to the past, through my mother and my grandmother.
It was at my friend Susie Locke's house. She turned 12 6 months before me. It was at her party. We always shared presents. I would even know which one she would share with me. We opened them all together. A doll, a Nancy Drew book, puffy stickers, earrings, bicycle handlebars.
Wait!
What is it?
It's from my dad.
It was a little girl, sitting with her hands folded. She was wearing lace petticoats and her curls were tied up in a big ribbon. She sat with her solemn face, not a big grin like you see on kids' picture at the department store. A face with no expectations, like the picture were a duty, not a gift. She looks just like you.
It's my grandmother.
I've never had anything like that.
Most of our pictures were lost in the war.
Not even once when mom and dad were young.
Those were left back home. When we left our lives behind, we left almost everything behind. I am here in the town of Brooklyn, in the city of New York. The state is New York also. Very confusing. It is the way in Brooklyn to talk very loud, especially when young. The children play in the streets, even if cars are coming. But like the little boys selling cigarillos in the streets of Cebu, they are able to get out of the way. It is the way here to be always working. The cars go very fast and the people are in a hurry. For those who walk slow like me, like some old people and some families with children, there are others who are impatient and push from behind you, looking sullen. It is the way here always to have some place to go.
Is it strange to dream about your mother's country? One that you don't remember at all? When I go to bed at night and images start to flicker in my eyes, it is the ocean I hear, or my own breathing. Lights out. The sound of breathing fills the darkness. It ebbs and flows, slowly and steadily. It ebbs and flows like the ocean. Somehow, the sound of breathing becomes the ocean, which dies down again. Only the sound of crickets can be heard. If I can remember most of the dream, I write it down, and I use it to write my stories.
Aye, yes. Your mother told me that you want to be a novelist and travel all over the world.
Sure. I used to tell all my stories to Albert, and he loved them so much. He told me to write them down, so that other people could read them. I'm glad he told me that, because I think he's busy with other things right now. And even when I'm talking to him, I don't think he always hears me. Lola?
Yes, Rosie, I'm listening.
We live in the shelter of the mountains.
It's as lonely as a sad song.
The boughs of the trees are our pathways.
Our water jugs are poles of bamboo.
Our plates are coconut husks.
Our meat is what we can catch.
It's so lonely that the monkeys are our neighbors.
What we eat are root crops, for gardener's sake.
Our beds are the skin of trees.
Our blankets are, for gardener's sake, banana leaves.
Life, life in the mountains.
There are still some Filipinos who believe that there are spirits who live in the ground, in the stones, in the darkness beneath the trees. My grandfather believed in them, but he was not afraid of them. They are very old. They have seen many things. To call upon them is to call upon the memory of the very earth. Zeus, Rosie. How powerful they are, and yet they cannot live where there's no belief. Here you might find some who say they believe in God, but it is in the head, not in the heart. So how much less are there who believe in spirits? But you come from the same country. Rosie, you can remember. You just have to reach beyond all memory of what you have known here. It's like a song being sung among many other noises. Block out the other noises and listen for the song. They say my grandfather Rosario came from nowhere, that there were no records of his birth, that no one remembered hearing of him from other towns. They say he was descended from witches. He came to the town of Katmon, and being bright and strong, he attracted attention in the small fishing village. The mayor of Katmon took such liking in him. Some say he was bewitched, that he adopted him, almost as a son, and sent him to the University of Santo Tomas. The Spanish students looked down on him for not being fair, for not being Spanish.
How mean.
It's okay, Anak. It's only a dream.
No, I remember. I remember walking in the streets. A rich lady was on my right, and a fruit vendor to my left. I remember singing the same song as I waved flowers. Flowers that seem to multiply, like the loaves and the fishes. I remember seeing the soldiers shining guns. I remember pitying their nervous faces. I remember the word we chanted, La Ban, La Ban.
Once upon a time.
I remember crying when martial law was declared. I remember Uncle Manny, who used to say what he wished. I remember one night he disappeared. I remember the next morning his brother had bruises on his face. I remember seeing Imelda's picture at my cousin's house. I remember she gave them forks and spoon, plated in gold.
I remember.
Once upon a time.
Listening to the wireless radio, running up to the American soldier and asking him for his K rations.
Chocolate, Joe.
Their food tasted so good.
Running from the Japanese.
Our house burned down in the war. Once upon a time. I remember.
I remember seeing seven ships sailing into Manila Bay. A fleet of Spanish vessels sank into the bloody water.
The Spanish word war.
But we fought for the Americans.
Spain surrendered. And so surrendered us.
After 400 years of Spanish rule, we were the Americans' little brown brothers. I remember I was a poor little brown girl and I sat in the cheap seat of the balconies in the movie houses. I remember seeing the army officers below. I remember seeing rich white immigrants wearing silk and pears.
Once upon a time.
I remember picking root crops from the ground that had fed my father. I remember yielding the root crops to a fat conquistador, the lord of the estate.
I remember he had sailed in from Mexico. I remember the day he took our land. I remember he raped me and gave me a mestizo son.
Once upon a time.
I remember I wanted to be a nun. I remember a friar seduced me. Once upon a time.
I was a priestess to my tribe, and our chieftains stood proud and tall, and they, with their half-naked bodies and bows and spears, defeated a white man in Admon. A man named Magellan, with a spear in his heart, lay dead on the bloody beach.
Once upon a time.
I remember running free in the land of sun. You see, the Filipino woman, the Filipina, is descended from a long line of priestesses. And I could remember all my dreams as if I were dreaming them for the first time. Once upon a time, I was a little girl with a secret and wonderful power. Till Voices Wake Us, a play by Luella Dizon. From the collection Contemporary Plays by Women of Color.
They say that history repeats itself. 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 Repeats itself. But history is his story. It's not my story. What's your story?
תותים, יונה וולך. כשתבואי לשכב איתי, תלבשי שמלה שחורה, מאוירת בתותים, ומקבעת שחורה, מקושטת בתותים. ואחזיקי סלסלת תותים, ותמכרי לי תותים. תגידי בקול דק ומתוק, תותים, תותים, מי רוצה תותים? אל תלבשי כלום מתחת לשמלה. אחר כך, חוטים יעלו אותך למעלה, בלתי נראים או נראים, וירידו אותך ישר על הזין שלי. יונה וולך. Strawberries. כשתבואי לשכב איתי, תלבשי שמלה שחורה, מאוירת בתותים, ומקבעת שחורה, מקושטת בתותים, ואחזיקי סלסלת תותים, ותמכרי לי תותים. תגידי בכל דק ומתוק, decorated with strawberries. מי רוצה תותים? And hold a basket of strawberries. And sell me strawberries. חוטים יעלו אותך למעלה, בלתי נראים או נראים, וירידו אותך ישר על הזין שלי. Strawberries, by יונה וולך. When you come to sleep with me, wear a black dress, printed with strawberries, and a black wide-brimmed hat, decorated with strawberries, and hold a basket of strawberries, and sell me strawberries. Tell me in a sweet, high voice, strawberries, strawberries. Who wants strawberries? Don't wear anything underneath the dress. Later, strings will lift you up, invisible or visible, and lower you directly on my prick.
They had developed their most advanced systems for mapping desire known to men, literally. They all seemed satisfied to live in a world of tops, bottoms, masks, femmes divided into various size, shape, hair level, affiliations. It was less a result of sexual exploration than a marketplace that mimicked the artificial volition offered by a shopping mall. The complexities of sensual want were denied prima facie in lieu of the easy, greasy, sleazy and cheap alternative. Fucking or getting fucked. For one night only, possibly more if he could tolerate his breath.
This is not the frozen rage of serial killers, which
identified with women, sensuality, pleasure, emotions, the devil, animals, and Mother Earth. The body was just and self-loading. Power society permits in its language abstract generalizations which, unanalyzed, can be repressive, such as the glorification of nature, which has been used to straitjacket women.
Medusa's rage, embodied by seething snakes that turn men into stone, seems to be an appropriate response to
servitude. Humanity is clearly on a suicide course, and taking the rest of the planet with it. One has to be in an insane state of denial to not acknowledge that we are in absolute ecological, economic, and moral crisis. Our inherited patriarchal, hierarchical
anger
system
is, emotion,
is breaking apart.
Anger is an emotion which must be reclaimed and legitimized as women's rightful, healthy expression. Anger can be a source of power, strength, and clarity, as well as a creative force.
The archetype of the logical, rational, scientific male expert, exemplified by the 1950s nuclear physicist who, isolated in an ivory tower of scientific omnipotence, develops nuclear devices and then to acknowledge the disastrous consequences of his research.
Will also tear apart anything that
people
comes
feel no
near
connectedness or accountability to the Earth. Other species
of mothering, nurturing, female lioness will also tear apart anything that comes near her cubs. So if that's projected onto women, doesn't that mean they'd also be great warriors?
Anger is an emotion which must be reclaimed and legitimized as women's rightful.
We refuse to operate under the assumption that risk and harm associated with data practices can be bounded to mean the same thing for everyone, everywhere, at every time. We commit to acknowledging how historical and systemic patterns of violence and exploitation produce differential vulnerabilities for communities. We refuse any code of phony ethics and false proclamations of transparency that are wielded as cover, as tools of power, as forms of escape that let the people who create systems off the hook from accountability or responsibility. We commit to a feminist data ethics that explicitly seeks equity and demands justice by helping us understand and shift how power works. We refuse to close the door behind ourselves. We commit to entering ethically compromised spaces like the academy and industry, not to implicate ourselves into the hierarchies of power, but to subvert, undermine, open, make possible.
People finally say to you, in an attempt to dismiss the social reality, "But you're so bitter." Well, I may or may not be bitter, but if I were, I would have good reasons for it. Chief among them, that American blindness or cowardice which allows us to pretend that life presents no reasons for being bitter.
From this distant vantage point, the Earth might not seem of any particular interest. But for us, it's different. Consider again that dot. That's here. That's home. That's us. On it, everyone you love, everyone you know, everyone you ever heard of, every human being who ever was, lived out their lives. The aggregate of our joy and suffering, thousands of confident religions, ideologies, and economic doctrines, every hunter and forager, every hero and coward, every creator and destroyer of civilization, every king and peasant, every young couple in love, every mother and father, hopeful child, inventor and explorer, every teacher of morals, every corrupt politician, every superstar, every supreme leader, every saint and sinner in the history of our species lived there, on the mote of dust, suspended in a sunbeam.
There's another place in space beyond what you know as time, where the gods of mythology dwell. Gods that are not real to you. Gods who have created the illusion that they do not exist to the people of planet Earth. These gods dwell in their mythocracy, opposed to your theocracy and your democracy and your monocracy. They dwell in their mythocracy, a magic world that makes things to be. These gods can even offer you immortality.
Myths, methodologies, and methods.
That's a myth for sure. Yeah, no, that's a myth. That's a myth. Recording.
If method is a practice, what do we call the one who practices it?
Methodologist.
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 Myth plus method plus logos.
I like mythoid.
Mythoid is something from outer space for sure.
Mythoids are not the people that practice the methods. They're the people that receive the methods and then share them with the others.
Are they prophets?
No, they're mythoids.
And they have huge impact where they when a meteoroid crashes, you know, the site of
the crater.
The greater, yes.
It's like the methods come to them like metals come to Earth, and they just receive them, and then their job is to share them.
It's a methodocelium that happens, like a mycelium of mushrooms, like a rhizome of methods that just grows everywhere once the seed is dropped onto fertile grounds.
Is a methodocelium a mushroom?
Only in a metaphor. Otherwise, it's a very concrete thing. It means that once a method is created, other methods will pop up like mushrooms after the rain.
Oh, no.
You don't like mushrooms?
No, I just don't like popping methods.
Who controls methods?
Whoever controls the myth controls the method.
We can have the same myth and not the same method.
Can we?
Yeah, I think that's true. I think the method is informed by a multiplicity of myths, simultaneously, even sometimes.
Yeah, the smallest part of the myth might be the myth itself, and the bigger part of it is like the energy and feelings that are put into believing it.
The smallest particle of the myth is desire.
What is our urgency to create myths and methods?
Crisis.
Of?
Of everything. No, don't stop. No.
That was really nice.
Oh.
Thank you. I needed it.
Rituals.
Do you think that methods have more outcome when it becomes a form of discipline?
To search for a method is a disciplined practice.
I see more myths when I dream than when I pray.
Oh, does a myth give you power?
Without myth, you are powerless. Question mark?
Yeah.
Methods and methodologies are intimate. They cannot be anything else.
But does one want intimacy from their myths?
And also, to what extent can you not share that intimacy?
Is a myth something secret or sacred?
Myth is a cruel mistress.
Myth comes from desire.
It's a self-destructive process, believing in myths.
Why?
Myths should not ever be accomplished. And in our striving to accomplish or bring a myth to fruition, we break our backs, we injure our knees, and we bend over backwards.
Is it worth it?
Nope.
Myths can change. There can be a lot of versions of the same myth, and we do everything in order to create for ourselves the myth that we need.
I'm ready to question whether or not we indeed need myths.
And then these methods adapt to this myth.
A myth and its methods to only be the striving for the impossible and nothing else.
Healthy routines and acts of self-care and discipline.
Myths that you have the control over or even the privileges to say no to.
Being in search of these methods, a way to achieve a myth that you're believing in it, but nevertheless, whether you like achieve that myth or not, if these methods are adapted to a myth, they're going to make you feel a certain way that is... But most of the time will be very close to what you're trying to achieve, if it's the right methods.
A myth is an organic matter. It grows, it dissolves, it dies, it changes, it mutates.
Myth can also be synthetic.
Myth can be a chosen obsession.
Myth can be an unwanted affliction.
Myth can be an act of self-care as much as it can be an act of self-sabotage.
Of course, they outlive the individual, but they can also exist without that individual. You know, they're produced by an individual or a collective, but somehow they have the traits of completely existing independently of that.
Myths are self-sufficient. They absolutely don't need us to exist.
Yes, myths are AI. Myths are the future. Self-reproductive, self-sustainable, hyper-computized fucking circuitry.
We can't control them. They're out in the wild. We just try to find the ones that kind of work for us. As humanity, maybe. It's embedded in every cell that we observe. In every little subatomic particle, nano, quantum level of physics, there is a little bit of meat.
I had this talk about translation once. The fact that the original book in the original language will be published, like, will always be published like the same way. But somehow a translation, like if you want it to be relevant, it has to be rewritten every 10 years. Because it's translated by the brain that is thinking through that generational thinking.
Can I just say something? Myth gives us pleasure.
Yes, we should have started with
Yeah, we didn't mention that it's design.
Sure. Exactly. Yes, we caught up to the desire part quickly, but then we're like, we spaced out. No, indeed.
Myth is desire, yeah.
Myth is pleasure.
A lot of people have tried to contain me or to limit me, but you see, that is not my type of being, to be limited. You might call me a catalyst. A catalyst changes everything, but it remains unchanged. I've been called that. The Baroness Rothschild says that I'm a catalyst. So if you get one person on the planet to say that you are something, you got something to work with. So it's two of us say that I'm a catalyst. I am looking for people to make Judgment Day a reality and to realize that neither God or anybody else is going to judge humanity. They have to do the judging as to what is proper for them to survive. Now, they can judge whether I'm really telling a lie or whether I'm telling the truth. If I'm telling a lie, they have to judge whether the lie is more profitable to them than the truths that they know. So therefore, I'm paving the way for humanity to recognize the myth and become part of my mythocracy instead of their theocracies and their democracies and the other ocracies they got. They can become part of the magic myth, the magic touch of the mythocracy, because everything that's unknown is part of the myth. And I'm sure that the myth can do more for humanity than anything they ever dreamed possible.